All right, we'll call the meeting of the River Forest Zoning Board of Appeals to order. Will the secretary please call the roll?
Mr. Smetana, not here. Ms. Schubkegel.
Here.
Ms. O'Brien.
Here.
Mr. Lucchese.
Here.
Mr. Dombrowski.
Here.
Mr. Bernie.
Here.
Chairman Martin.
Here. All right, we have a quorum. First matter on the agenda this evening is to approve the minutes of our meeting on February 14th. Mr. Raddatz circulated these minutes earlier, and I think there were some changes made to them. And those changes have now been distributed. Everybody had an opportunity to review the minutes. Is there a motion to approve them?
I'll make a motion.
Is there a second? I second the motion to approve the minutes of this meeting. Any discussion? All right, so we need to have a vote on whether or not to approve the minutes of our February 14th meeting, and only those who are present at that meeting should vote.
Ms. Schubkegel.
Aye.
Ms. O'Brien.
Yes.
Mr. Dombrowski.
Yes.
Mr. Bernie.
Pass.
Chairman Martin.
Yes. All right, the next thing on the agenda is the findings of fact from that meeting. These findings need to be submitted to the Board of Trustees along with our recommendation. Again, Mr. Raddatz distributed these, and there have been some changes made to correct a few things in them. Has everybody had an opportunity to review these findings of fact? Somebody want to make a motion to approve the findings of fact from the meeting held on February 14th?
Motion.
Is there a second? All right, it's been moved and seconded. Any discussion related to these findings of fact? All right, can we call the vote, please?
Ms. Schubkegel.
Yes.
Ms. O'Brien.
Yes.
Mr. Dombrowski.
Yes.
Chairman Martin.
Yes. All right, next on the agenda, we have a request for a variation for the property at 559 Ashland Avenue in River Forest. We would ask that everyone who intends to address the board on this matter please stand so you can be sworn in by the secretary. Well, you're gonna, do you want to address us?
Sure.
Okay. All right. So you want to swear him in, Cliff?
Yes. Please raise. To those who will testify at the public hearing, you are reminded that the River Forest Village Code makes it unlawful for any person to knowingly make a false statement of material fact to the village in connection with any application, report, affidavit, oath, certification, or attestation. Violations are punishable as a petty offense with a fine. Please raise your right hand. Do you solemnly swear or affirm that you will give true testimony to the matters before this Zoning Board of Appeals?
Yes.
Okay. All right, so you were here once before on this. Our procedure is the same. We give you as an applicant an opportunity to present your application for a variance. Then we will ask if there's anybody in the audience who wants to comment on it, and we'll discuss it among ourselves and make a recommendation to the village board. Okay. So we're ready to proceed. If you would go to the podium and just for the record, introduce yourself and proceed with your presentation.
So I'll be succinct about this. My name is Paul Harding. This is my wife, Cheryl. The first one is the request is to have the roof taper on this elongated triangle so it would go from 0 to 1 foot over the setback. Very modest area, and that's designed to reflect the architecture of the existing Davenport house. And so it doesn't impact the daylight. If this is south or neighboring, and then we pulled the garage back further from the property line. So in general, it's an enhancement Just as background information, the Davenport House is a 1901 Frank Lloyd Wright house. It's nationally significant house. It's the first Prairie School house to be built in Chicago and its suburbs. And it it's been widely published. It's everything from the New York Times to books about Frank Lloyd Wright. It's one of the few buildings in River Forest that is in the Green Michelin Guide to the Chicago. And we have spent a substantial amount of money to restore the house thus far. So part of what we're doing with the design is that there's an existing 100-year-old oak tree, which you see here. So we want to preserve that so the house is, so the building is notched around that. We went as close as we could get as the landscape architect would let us. And then it has a special foundation system with the piers so that we would not destroy the wood structure of the tree. And as the chairman had mentioned, this had been approved once before by the Zoning Commission and the Village Board. So the other piece of this is that the we want to maintain fidelity of the garage to the existing house, and that includes working with the existing roof pitch. And the challenge that we have is that, like most of River Forest, all the property slopes to the river. And the zoning ordinance, the way it's written, it establishes a datum reference point at the sidewalk along the street. And that's fantastic for the people on the west side of the north-south streets. For homeowners such as Cheryl and I, we're penalized because the garage is higher back here in relationship to the street. So the grade is higher. And then the other penalty that we face is that the neighbor to the east of us, when they redid their yard, whatever, they put a little mini retaining wall, and that retaining wall is, the way it works in functionally, is that the water goes over the top of it. It's trapped on our property. And so what we've done to mitigate that is that working with the village engineer and Cliff, so this is raised up to accommodate that and also response to the ordinance. So we're kind of squeezed both ways by the topography, by the ordinance, and what the neighbor is doing. So with the water issue, we want to be a good neighbor. So we're putting in a dry well that will pick up the water in this area here. The dry well is basically a big manhole. It's about 5 feet wide in diameter, and then it extends down the ground to approximately 8 feet. It's designed to hold water and let it gradually percolate down in the ground. So with this, you can see the area that we're asking for, that small triangle here. And then this is at the flare, which is a small part of it, but it flares up at the end just like it's at the original 1901. So, in my opinion, it would be a hardship to spend the kind of money that we've spent on this, on the main house, and not do something that was consistent with it architecturally, and we certainly don't want to tear down the tree. So what I'd like to do is open up the questions, comments.
Mr. Would you mind talking at the podium so we can record this?
Okay. Would you like me to repeat that?
No.
Okay, thank you.
All right, so just if we could make this application clear to me. Mr. Raddatz, do you want to tell us what the two variations are that are being requested?
Okay. The first
variation, which was the same one that was requested back in 2016, something like that, is that the for an accessory building in the rear 30% of the lot, the wall of the building is allowed to have a side yard setback of 3 feet. And the roof is allowed to extend a foot into that required side yard setback. With the plan as presented, the garage is further back, but the roof overhangs are much larger than your average garage. And the roof overhang at their nearest points to the building are at the point where they should be per the zoning ordinance, but the end of the roof overhang on the south side projects like a prow, and at the ridge it projects an additional foot into the required side yard setback.
All right, so do both of these variation requests pertain to the garage?
Yes.
Yes.
And not to the house?
Correct.
Just the garage.
Right.
And one of the variations was presented to this board a couple of years ago, and it was approved by the village board, but it lapsed because the permits weren't taken out in a timely fashion.
Correct. There's a period of 9 months, right, in which a permit has to be taken out.
Which of the requests for variation was the one that was previously granted?
The first one, which I just described regarding the side yard setback for the roof overhang.
And has there been any change in the plans that were submitted previously and acted upon by the village and the plans that are being presented now that relate to that variation?
Not in regard to that variation.
Okay. Okay. And the second variation has to do with the height of the one portion of the garage roof. Is that correct?
Well, the entirety of the ridge of the garage roof. For an accessory building, the garage is limited to a height of 1.5 stories and no more than 18 feet, being measured from the elevation at the front sidewalk to the highest point of the roof. The roof as proposed is 19 foot 6 to the ridge, but the overhangs slope up, which is a design feature that is sympathetic with the house, and it raises another 6 inches. So at the ends, at two points at the far ends of the garage, the elevation is actually 20 feet. Along the ridge, it's 19 foot 6. Right. Am I correct on that?
Well, it's intended to be 19 feet 10, and then because of recent challenges that the village has faced, where people build it within normal construction tolerances, it was slightly higher. We've got a contingency of 2 inches.
Okay.
And the goal is not to use the contingency, but I wanted to carry that so that we wouldn't have to come back here.
All right, so has Mr. Raddatz accurately stated what the two variations are that you're requesting?
Correct.
And could you tell us what's the reason for the second variation tonight why wasn't it part of the application that was presented earlier?
Well, I did not, in all candor, I didn't realize the thing. I'm an architect, and it's really unusual that you tie building elevations, building height restrictions at a building at the rear of a property to something at the opposite to 125 feet away. It's really an unusual, weird way to do it. And originally, everything was designed towards that 18-foot dimension above the finished floor slab, which is the common way to do it. So it was an oversight on my part, and I apologize for that.
So what's the height from the ground level to the peak of the roof measured at the location of the garage?
Let me just, it's roughly 5 inches to the slab. Is that what it, with the, I just followed the village ordinance. It's in the range of 5 to 7 inches.
Okay, wasn't clear. What's the height of the building measured at it? What's the height of the building to the top of the ridge measured at the location of the building, not from the point on the sidewalk?
It's nominally about 18 feet, 7.5 inches.
Okay. And would you tell us the reason why you think this garage has to have the roof with the pitch and the height that that requires the variation?
Because the house has a 5 and 12 pitch, and we want to match that pitch. I mean, it's not an ordinary house. A tremendous amount of effort went into the design of the house by Frank Lloyd Wright. We've made a tremendous effort at great expense to restore the house, and what we're after is fidelity to the original house, bearing in mind that it's a nationally important house historically.
And if the variation is not granted, would you tell us how that's going to impact the garage and the fidelity of the garage to the house itself?
Well, if it's not granted, then I have to pursue another option, whatever that is. I mean,
it's not going to match. Why don't you just tell us that?
I'm not going to do that. I mean, I'm not going to, I'm under oath. I'm not going to do something that doesn't match the house.
We're trying to get you to tell us what the hardship is.
So the hardship is that by the time it's all said and done, we'll have between 2 and 3 times the amount of money in the house that it could sell for. So if you restore Frank Lloyd Wright house, you're doing it out of a certain amount of idealism. It would be a hardship to put that kind of money into the house and not have that same kind of fidelity extend back to the garage.
So other than the economics of that you're talking about, could you tell us how the house will not be true to the garage would not be true to the design and match the design of the house, and would that be a hardship?
Yeah, it would be a hardship to somebody that's trying to maintain the fidelity of the house on a nationally significant Frank Lloyd Wright property.
And might that impact the way that the house is, the significance of the house is viewed as a nationally significant Frank Lloyd Wright property?
I don't think it would be good for it.
Okay. All right. Anything else you want to tell us?
No, we appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedules to serve on the Zoning Commission, and we appreciate your interest in the property and hearing what we have to say.
All right. So is there, Mr. Radis, is there anybody in the audience is there anybody out there who wishes to address the board on the request for the variation on this property? You want to stand and get sworn in, please? Identify yourself.
Why don't we swear in, everybody?
All right, everybody who's going to talk to us tonight on anything,
any issues.
Stand up at once.
Okay.
We'll make it easy.
You've all heard the admonition.
Yes.
Please raise your right hand. Do you solemnly swear or affirm to give true testimony in the matters before this Zoning Board of Appeals?
I do.
All right. Thank you. Mr. Lauber, would you identify yourself and address the board, please?
Daniel Lauber, 7215 Oak. I am a city planner since 1972 and a zoning and fair housing attorney since 1985. I'm a past president of the American Planning Association and twice of the American Institute of Certified Planners, and I know this house far better than you might imagine because Jeanette Fields and Ellie K. Fields lived there, and I grew up in South Shore across the alley from them. So they were friends for my entire life. And we were at that house many times, and they made extreme efforts to maintain its architectural integrity. And I think that it is incumbent upon the village to allow this variation in order to maintain the architectural integrity of the garage so it will match the nationally historically significant architecture of the house and maintain Frank Lloyd Wright's vision. I think it would pose a hardship to, in the sense that we would be losing, it's got nothing to do with the cost, it's got to do with the loss of the architectural integrity of one of River Forest's most significant historical buildings and the its garage, which is part of the whole thing. And because of the nature of the lot, it would pose some serious problems if you don't allow this slight intrusion into the side yard. And apropos to what we'll be discussing next, no harm, no foul. I don't see any harm to the next door neighbor by allowing this, which I think is very important, because the whole reason we're going through this is to protect the next door neighbors. And I don't see how this small extension of the eave would cause any reduction in light. I don't see how it would cause flooding. I don't see any damage to the next or adverse impacts to the next door neighbor. So I urge you to approve this application.
Thank you. Anyone else in the audience wish to address us on this application? Mr. Harding, anything else you want to say? If you do, we got to ask you to go back up there.
I mean, if you look at the drawings of the house and the drawings of the garage, I mean, we've gone to great extremes, even with the garage. We could have done something that was much more economical with a lot more cheaper materials and without the architecture of the Frank Lloyd Wright house. So we want to be good citizens, and what we're doing, it's not an ordinary garage. It's a special garage for a special house.
Okay, thank you. So no one else wishing to address the board, we're going to close the public portion of the hearing, and we as a board will now discuss this and decide what kind of recommendation to make to the Village Board of Trustees. Anybody got any comments?
Exemption to what other hardships may be. So I think the allowances are minimal here. I don't think anyone else is being harmed by it. I think I have a problem voting in favor of allowing the variance.
Anybody else have any comments? Anybody want to make a motion? Okay, so is there a second to the motion?
I second.
All right, it's been moved and seconded that we recommend to the Village Board of Trustees that both these variations be granted. Is there any discussion on this matter? Are you ready to vote? All right, so as you vote, remember that there are a number of standards that are supposed to be met in order to grant the variation. If you're voting for the variation, you're making a determination that each of the standards has been met, not most of them, not almost all of them, but all of them. All right, so it's been moved and seconded to recommend these variations. So a yes vote is to recommend the variation. Do you want to call the roll, Mr. Raddatz?
Ms. Schubkegel.
Yes.
Ms. O'Brien. Mr. Lucchese?
Yes.
Mr. Dombrowski?
Yes.
Mr. Burney?
Yes.
Chairman Martin?
Yes. I believe that it has been stated to the board what the hardship would be if this variations were not requested, and thank Mr. Lauber for doing so. All right, so the recommendation of the Zoning Board of Appeals to the Village Board of Trustees is that this these variations be granted. Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
So the next matter on the agenda this evening is consideration of some proposed zoning code amendments. These amendments have been submitted for our consideration by the Village Board of Trustees. So I think the way we're going to conduct this hearing is we're going to ask that Mr. Palm is here to make a presentation of these proposed amendments. He's going to address all three of them one at a time. Then we will ask Mr. Houseel to, on behalf of the village as the village planner, to comment on these amendments, and then we will open these proposed amendments up for testimony by the or comment from the public. Ultimately, we will discuss and vote on these one at a time, but for the intent of the presentation, we're going to ask that all three of the amendments be addressed by the proponent and Mr. Houseel at the same time.
All right, very good. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Eric Palm, Village Administrator for the Village of River Forest. So just by way of background, for the record, from time to time, the village in itself can become an applicant for whether it's a variation of some sort, if it was a property that it owned, or if it wants to make amendments to the zoning code, it can file a petition, which it has done in this case, and then ask the ZBA through its process to review that, and then ultimately make a recommendation back to the village board for consideration. So there are three items before you tonight. One of them we have talked about in the past, and we'll save that one for last. And on your agenda, I think we'll go in, if it's all right with the board, we'll go in reverse order for these for this discussion. The first one deals with accessibility considerations and plan developments. So when the Development Review Board ultimately heard the application from Concordia University Chicago regarding the link that connected two of the buildings on campus, when that matter got to the board, there was some discussion regarding disability access for those with disabilities in that link. And while the and so in terms of that review, the staff obviously uses the American with Disabilities Act guidelines as well as the Illinois Accessibility Code in order to review that and make sure those codes are met. But I think the board, there was some disappointment on the board that Concordia did not take that link a step further, which connects those buildings, and provide disability either access or work to make that more friendly and accommodating for those with disabilities. So having some discussion about that, we didn't want to change the building code side of things because there are already good rules and laws and regulations in place regarding that. But the thought was to change one of the amend one of your standards in the plan development ordinance to include some context around making sure the development is sensitive to those who have disabilities. So what we're suggesting and asking for your review and consideration is to take section 10-19-3 item K, which is one of your standards within the plan development ordinance. As it reads, it says the design of the proposed use or combination of uses promotes a safe and comfortable pedestrian environment. We would change that to read promotes a safe and comfortable environment for pedestrians and individuals with disabilities. And so that standard would be amended to include, again, those regular pedestrians and then those with disabilities. And so that is the first text amendment.
Okay. What's the next one?
The second one is in regards to child daycare centers. So Mosaic Montessori, which is a leases space out of the River Forest United Methodist Church, had approached the village about allowing a daycare facility to operate out of that out of their school at the church. And so as it presently stands within the zoning code, child daycare centers first are not, they are defined but not allowed currently in the zoning code. Child daycare homes are within the appropriate residential zoning districts, but child daycare centers are not. And so after speaking with the village attorney and talking to the village board, it was suggested that child daycare centers be allowed, but as a special use. So not as a permitted use, so you couldn't come in as a matter of right and open up a daycare center, because we feel that, you know, as it relates to matters of traffic, drop-off, pick-up, things of that nature, there should be an additional review that goes along with that. Further, we believe that special use should be very focused and only allowed in the PRI zoning district. That in the PRI zoning district is public, private, recreational, institutional. So your parks, your schools, your public-owned property, the universities, they are all in the PRI zoning district. So this would not allow this in a commercial zoning district, residential zoning district, anything of that nature, but strictly in PRI. If the ZBA were to recommend and the village board would ultimately would approve this, Mosaic Montessori would then have the ability to file a special use application, and this that special use application would come to this body. Again, you would make a recommendation that would go to the village board. All right. Then item number three is regarding side yard setbacks. And so I believe a couple of you were on the board back in 2012 when we last discussed this. And this deals with the ability of a homeowner to construct an addition onto their property. And at the time, the old setback rules were that the setbacks were 3 feet in the residential zoning districts. They were ultimately moved to 5 feet. And then over time, what started happening was that people were trying to put additions on their homes and then were unable to do so without a variation because they couldn't extend pre-existing non-conforming walls back, right? So they already were in the new, they were potentially compliant within the 3 feet, 3 foot setback, but then within the 5 foot setback, were not compliant. And so we were getting a significant amount of variations that were coming to this body and then ultimately to the village board. So back in 2012, the rule was changed to essentially allow the non-conforming, pre-existing non-conforming wall to continue on an additional 20 feet back. So you could go back, but the recommendation at the time was you could then not go up. So since that time, since 2012, we've had more variations, and so, many of those, I believe we've had, I think I left my notes back there, I think we've had eight since
12 in the last decade.
Okay. And John has more information and he will discuss this in greater detail. We've had about 12 variations that still continue to deal with this issue. And so what the village board asked for at the last meeting was to send this matter back to the ZBA for your counsel and input to see if that rule should stay the same or ultimately should be changed to allow people to have the ability as a matter of right to go vertical as they extend the addition back into their property. And then we've also added some language in the proposed text amendment that would also deal with the eaves. So let me read just for the record, let me just read both of these. So for the eaves, there would be a sentence that is added that said the eave, right now it says the eaves of a structure shall be required to maintain a minimum 3 foot side yard setback. Further, it would state that the eave of the addition, where the eave of the existing structure does not meet this standard, may be constructed with a side yard equal to the existing non-conforming side yard of that eave. So it would allow people to maintain the existing non-conforming eave. And then in terms of the additions, the text would be modified to state that, Non-conforming wall built along a non-conforming side yard may be extended an additional 20 feet as of right into the non-conforming side yard, and the height of a wall that maintains a non-conforming side yard setback may strike not, so it'd say may be increased, with a side yard setback equal to the existing non-conforming side yard of that wall. And this addition shall conform to the applicable front and rear yard.
So that basically means they can go up.
Correct.
As high as they're permitted.
Within the existing zoning code for height, correct.
As high as they're permitted without any notice to anybody.
Correct. And so that is the overview of the three text amendments. I believe Mr. Housiel has some additional information he's going to share.
Great. You want to sit down, John?
No, I'd love to, but I need to have my leg elevated even if I do.
What's easiest for you?
Standing, because okay. There's nothing to put my leg on, so. That's why I've been standing in the back. Okay, for the record, John Housiel, resident of River Forest for about 20 years, Village's planning and zoning consultant for about 21 years. So I'll take these in the same order that Eric just went through them as well to comment on a little bit. Happens all the time. A little bit of history in terms of staff-initiated text amendments. Text amendments typically come in two forms, one staff-initiated or municipal-initiated, or as part of an applicant coming forward, just like they would a variation or a special use, they ask a text amendment. Unlike a variation, the important thing to remember is when a text amendment happens, it happens to all the properties in that zoning district. A variation applies to that one particular property. A special use only applies to a particular property. A text amendment changes to all the properties similarly zoned. So it's village-wide application. The first one, the accessibility in plan developments. I agree with the village's request to look at this in terms of how they approach it. The American Disabilities Act, both federally and in terms of Illinois, dictates as part of the building code, just like fire safety code, building code, what you have to do. You can't relieve from that. Either you meet fire safety codes or ADA codes or you don't. But that's not the issue. The issue was, and the example given was the link up at Dominican University, sort of that glass hallway connecting two older structures. Technically, it met all the ADA requirements, so no issue, but could the university have done a better job of making it a bit more accessible to people with disabilities? Sure, they could have made it a little bit more disability friendly. So I think the approach is exactly right. They don't want to go in and propose an amendment to the local building code that we use or any of that. What they're doing is they're putting in a reworded standard as part of the plan development. And what that does is when the plan development comes forward in front of the development review board, the DRB, and the village board, because it's a standard, it now has to be addressed by the applicant. Whereas before, it did not have to be addressed by the applicant. It was just, do you meet ADA, do you not? Now they have to address making it a pedestrian-friendly environment for people with disabilities as well. That way, the DRB can ask the applicant questions. The question has to respond thoughtfully and responsibly enough to get approval. And when it goes to the village board, it's a standard that has to be met and approved as well. So I think the approach is correct, changing the standard in the plan development application as opposed to changing the building code. So I think that's the exact right approach, and it's a good idea. So I don't know if we want to ask questions as we go through these or just at the end.
Do it.
All right, we'll just rifle through them then. So I think the approach for that text amendment is correct to section 10.19.3K of the plan development. The next one is a child daycare. This is an example where a text amendment is applied for a particular user for a particular use. They want a text amendment to allow something. If we grant it for this one applicant, and then makes it eligible to any applicant in the same zoning district to ask for it. To me, it makes perfect sense. Again, I support this one fully. We're talking about a child daycare center, and the PRI. The PRI is public, recreational, institutional. So municipal stuff, public stuff, the library, the parks, the schools, the colleges, the universities, that's all PRI zoning. And within those, we know that a lot of those have a wide variety of different types of uses that take place. It's not just teaching, it's not just recreation, it's a wide variety of uses depending on the institution. So to allow child daycare centers
as a special use. That means they would have to come in, tell you exactly how the facility would be operated, how drop-off pickup would take place, what the security measures were, who was going to be the instructors or the people taking care of the little kids. They would have to go through all these things at the Zoning Board of Appeals to get approval through a special use permit to conduct that use. It's not as of right. To me, it's a use that is very conducive to universities and schools and things like that as an accessory use to that. So to me, this is the right application to have a text amendment to add to the use table as a special use a child daycare center in the PRI district. It makes perfect sense. They still have to come, ask permission to make their case before they can do it, but it allows them to do that. And I think that makes sense. The last one is the issue of side yard setbacks, or more specifically, it's amending an existing structure's non-conforming setback or wall in the side yard. Eric talked about the changes that were made in 2012. I've been here long enough to remember going through this and changes the administration before that, about 8 years before that. So this will be the third time we've looked at it since I've lived here in the last 20 years. When it was looked at, not in 2012, but several years before that, under that administration, they convened. Before that, you couldn't go up, you couldn't go back. You needed a variation to do either, all right? And before years before that, the code was changed to accommodate, as opposed to a 3-foot minimum, a combined side yard setback. So if you had a 50-foot wide lot, the combined side yard was 25%. So 5 feet and 7.5 feet. 12.5 feet total, because that's 25% of a 50-foot wide lot, okay? No one side could be less than 5. So you could do, if you wanted to, you could do 5 and 7.5. If you wanted to, you could do 6 and 3/4 and 6 and 3/4, any combination to get you that 12.5 feet, but no one side could be less than 5. Likewise, and so the bottom line was the minimum side setback was 10% of the lot width. If you had a 50-foot wide lot, no one side could be less than 5 feet. If you did 5 feet, the other one is 7.5. If you had a 100-foot wide lot, the minimum on one side could be 10, the other one would have to be 15. Those two combined 25 feet, that's 25% of a 100-foot wide lot. So it's a sliding scale. And that was done proportional because the architectural styles vary so wildly. Lots, houses aren't always in the middle of the lot. Sometimes they shift a little bit historically to accommodate side driveways. That's why buildings are often offset on lots, because one side is closer, one side there's a driveway going back to a detached garage. So when that change came into effect, and now we're going back to, I don't know, 07 or something before that. They amended the ordinance. They created a committee. This is some context I think that is helpful. That administration said, we have to take a look at this, but I want local experts looking at it in addition to planning consultants and staff. So they had an ad hoc committee of 6 or 7 local architects. They were all residents. They were all architects or local builders, people who designed and built single-family homes and lived in River Forest. So they knew what was going on. That group came up with the recommendation of, if you go up, you need a variation. If you go back, the architect group said, if you give us 12 feet going back, no matter what the style of house is, Prairie, Italianate, Queen Anne, Four Square, you give us 12 feet back, we can design a jog to come in to conform that no one would look like it was just forced in. If you give us 12 feet of design material in depth, so then the issue was you could extend back 12 feet. Then you had to come in and conform. So you got a 12-foot extension back. Then you had to come back into whatever the legal setback was. Then you could go back further than 12 if you wanted. So after 06 or 07, when that was done, up till 2012, there were a number of variations where the boards, let's take a look at these two things again. So we got together. We did some more research, checked in with a number of other adjacent communities or Chicago regional communities with 100-year-old type housing stock, beautiful homes that were being reinvested, additions, et cetera, similar types of neighborhoods, to see how they did it. We talked with several builders and architects again, and the recommendation at that point was don't allow it to go up, but instead of 12 feet, give us 20 feet back. So now we have a 20-foot extension back, not just 12. So they extended it from 12 to 20, but didn't allow it to just go up as of right. They said a variation to go up. So now we've had a couple of cases or some cases where this is still coming up for variation. So now the board is again saying, do we want to examine now going up as of right? So the first thing I did is I looked at other communities again that have, again, neighborhoods that are not exact because nobody is, but similar types of neighborhoods, age of structures, a lot of investment, beautiful homes that are older, and with older homes come some problems or some challenges, I would say. Still the option I would take for sure to live in an old neighborhood. So I'll go through some of these pretty quickly. And there is no right way or wrong way to do this. Every community does it differently. That's it. And it is simply an effort to try to balance the rights of an individual property owner to do stuff with their property and protection of the neighbor so they have some assurance of what's going on next door. It's those two things. I'm trying to find that balance. And Oak Park permits both vertical and horizontal expansion of a nonconforming internal lot as of right. So Oak Park, you can do it. You don't need a variation, up or back, right? If it's nonconforming, it just says if it's legal nonconforming and you're not making it any closer, you can go up or back. You can extend it up and you can extend it further back.
Unlimited. So as you don't overcover the lot.
You have to meet all the other variations, all the other standards. You still have to meet height, you have to meet lot coverage, you have to meet all those other things. So talking just about how close it is to the lot line. Let's say if it's supposed to be 12 feet, say it's a bungalow and it's 8 feet off the property line, and it's supposed to be 10 feet off the property. You could take that one-story bungalow and make it 2.5 stories and double the distance back. As long as you met lot coverage and height, you could do anything you want to that wall except move it closer. You could move it up or extend it. As of right, no variation in Oak Park. And that was, let me just see here real quick. And that was reviewed by their code, and we confirmed it on the phone and reviewed it narratively with Mike Bruce. Riverside was the next one we looked at. Riverside does the, so again, these are communities that have similar neighbor housing stock. Riverside does the opposite of River Forest, all right? In Riverside, you can go up as of right. You cannot extend back. To extend back, you need a variation. They do just the opposite of what we do. One they allow as of right, the other they do not. So you can go up as of right, still have to meet height and everything else, but you cannot extend it further back on the lot. So just the opposite of River Forest. In all these cases, I'm focusing just on that setback and that wall. You have to meet lot coverage, all the others, height, you have to meet everything else. This is just assuming the only issue is where that wall is, okay? So Riverside, just the opposite of us. That was reviewed in their code, and it was reviewed over the phone with staff named Sonia Apt. Hinsdale, I'll kind of try to review this, but it's a mess. They have a very complicated code, and Tim Ryan, who we talked with on the phone, even confirmed it. Here you can expand it provided you comply with what they call the defined setback. So the code has setbacks in place for different districts. The village has then in these different neighborhoods or blocks what they say is defined setbacks, not just zoning regulations. And as long as you meet a defined setback, you can do whatever you want. But they weren't, it was very confusing to figure out what was codified by district, what was considered to be defined by staff application, and what was or wasn't permitted other than that. So that one is, even though we talked with Tim Ryan, that's not very applicable because it was really a nuanced sort of a code. Glen Ellen, their code does not permit expansion vertically or horizontally. You have to get a variation for either. If it's a nonconforming wall, if you're going to modify that wall, up or back, variation, doesn't matter. Evanston, if you're going to modify the wall up or back, you need a variation. You can't do either as of right. So nonconforming wall, you need a variation. Wilmette, they've recently changed theirs. It used to be you needed a variation for up or back. They now have an administrative zoning review procedure which staff can administer. Doesn't require going to the Zoning Board of Appeals. And depending on certain circumstances, they have a staff committee to review it. Staff can provide administrative authority to do changes. We talked with Lisa Roberts there, who's the assistant director, but I would have to get a little bit more clarification as to what those nuances are in terms of staff review. But again, you can't do it as of right. You have to seek relief. The only thing there, the relief is built in administratively, not through the ZBA. So you still need relief. You can't do it as of right. So in one of the communities that we looked at seven different communities with similar neighborhoods. Some you can do it. A couple you can do it as of right. Most you need relief. So again, there's no right or wrong way. There's no one way. The other thing I looked at was your ZBA history over the last decade. And the reason why is when text amendments are proposed by municipalities, again, they're often in response to an applicant asking something. I write zoning ordinances all over the country. I think I'm working on six right now in four different states. One of the things we first do is we go back and we mine at least a decade's worth of variation requests. And we see what the request is, was it approved or not, and to sort of see if there's a rhyme or reason to it. And the reason we do that is if a community is inundated with, recent one we did was in Cary, all right? It's going to the village board for adoption. They had a couple of zoning districts where they had such restrictive impervious surface coverage that anybody who wanted any kind of a patio had to go get a variation. I think it was a 30% max coverage. Everything was in between 30 and 38%, everything. And everything got approved, and it was their biggest source of variation requests. So they're having these hearings to accommodate these requests. They always approved them, and they got a ton of them. So we modified it from 30% to 40%, and 80% of the variation requests are going to disappear. So you data mine, you go back, you look at history, you say who's asking for what, is it always getting approved, is it overburdening the community, the process, the hearings, and if so, should we reexamine the code and change it? And the reason I say that is because variation history is crucial, so I went back to look specifically at all the variation requests in the last 10 years for River Forest. From what I could tell, there was a couple that dropped out or were withdrawn or whatever. But in general, over the last decade, there were 67 cases that sort of found its way all the way through. A few started and sort of petered out and got withdrawn. But it looks like there were 67 from the data I saw, 67 that went all the way through. There may be a few more than that. There were some data gaps in the Excel spreadsheet. Of those, about 70%, 68.7% were approved by the ZBA, and about 31.3% were denied by the ZBA. So they're about 70% approval, 30% denial, and that's not uncommon with most communities. You know, that's a more than 2-to-1 approval, which is pretty good. Of those 67, 12 were for what we're talking about this evening. 12 were worded as being modifications to an existing non-conforming structure to allow it to go up. Of those 12 applied for in the last decade, so a couple things I look for. To me, that wasn't an overburdensome amount. It wasn't like the village has been inundated with this specific type of request in the last decade. It averages out to about one a year. That's not much. It's not like 80% of your zoning requests are this one thing. It's one of many. I think it accommodated about 17% of your zoning requests. So about one a year. So I wanted to look at the frequency of them. So 12 in the last decade. Of the 12, only one was denied. So of the request for variations to modify a side yard setback and a non-conforming setback, you're about 92% approving them. So 11 out of 12 were approved in the last decade. So you're reviewing them, they're making their case, they're making enough compelling case to get recommendations for approval. One was denied. So when they do appear in front of the ZBA and the village board, they tend to get approved. So there's two things. One, they're not happening a ton, about once a year, a little more. And when they get applied for, evidence shows that 90%+ of the time they're getting approved when they make their case. So there wasn't anything overwhelmingly compelling for me to say, wow, this is really burdening the ZBA and residents because it's happening all the time. But on the same note, when they was getting requested, they were typically getting approved by the rate of about 92%. So they're not overly controversial. Now that said, so that's just some numbers. I just want to make sure we were clear on the numbers of what was going on, when it was proposed, how often, when they were approved, and the considerations. But the key thing I think to keep in mind here is what I said at the beginning. The important thing to consider is the balance. I'm not an attorney. There's probably a bunch of attorneys in the room. In River Forest, there's always at least three. A notion called fair certainty. And I think with zoning, that's especially important. Fair certainty is the notion that with some reasonable level of expectation, you know what you can do with your property, all right? But it's also the notion, with some reasonable level of expectation, of knowing what your neighbor can do with their property. One of the things, and this gets to the heart of this issue, is when you have homes with non-conforming side yard setbacks, the very nature of this zoning request right away puts it in front of the issue of, am I in a position to potentially really impact my neighbor, or more so than some other variation request. Pervious surface is a little higher, eave overhang on a garage at the back of the property, a foot more than it should be, We're talking about potentially a wall that may be 4 feet off the property line. It's supposed to be 8 feet off the property line. It's a bungalow that's on the south of your property, and it's the wall is 9 feet tall than a pitched roof, and they want to make that wall now 26 feet tall with a pitched roof. And if they're 4 feet off the property line and they're to the south of you, that's going to have a big impact on your property, potentially, depending on where your home is, in terms of light and air. If their property has a slightly bigger setback and it's on the north side of you, it might not be as big an issue. So again, it looks like the village typically approves these, but this, by its nature, more than almost any other type of variation, is a potential to impact your neighbor. So what the variation requires it to do is make the case that it's justified, there is a hardship, it will work design-wise with you and your neighbor. And again, most of the time, it looks over the last decade that these get approved, overwhelmingly get approved. So that's what's at issue. So the first two amendments that were proposed by or the village that you the CBA look at, I concur with. The third one, there's no right or wrong way. Evidence would show it doesn't happen a lot, but when it does, it's almost always approved. So the question would beg, is it still necessary to safeguard the impact on the neighbor, balanced against expediting a property owner to invest in their house more easily without a public hearing? And that's the balance. There is no right or wrong answer, but it only happens about once a year, and they typically get approved anyway. So it's not an overwhelming volume of applications, but the track record shows that they almost always get approved. So there's the question of, do we do away with it and let people go up as of right, or continue to say you need a variation so we can make sure it's okay with your neighbor and it's not too bad of an impact? Then if it meets those standards, then we'll let you go up. So, and there's no trend with neighboring communities or other communities. There's no one way to do this. Every community does it differently. So for the third time in 20 years, we're revisiting an issue that affects a lot of homes in our community, because we have a lot of old, beautiful homes that are built not to current standards, but the standards were in place at the time the homes went up. And that could have been 80 to 100 years ago. So that's just a little bit of background. So.
Any questions for Mr. Hausfeld at this point?
So John, just a question. When you say some were withdrawn, so we didn't count them, I can recall some discussions in the room sometimes where the neighbors came in and they were opposed to something. I can't remember right. what it was. And so it just went away sometimes. So I think that sometimes an open airing sometimes is helpful. So I don't think it should be like, oh, you go ahead and put that thing up there. I hate it. I don't want it. But so, you know, when you don't count every type of application, even if it's successful or not, so I think it should remain pretty much as it is. Right.
Yeah, and just to clarify, because I just want to make sure we're, you know, the data is what it is. There were maybe on the Excel spreadsheet about a half dozen cells that were filled in yellow because there wasn't a number. So I don't know what happened to those as they proceeded. None of those were related to the 12 of this type of variation request. There were other whatever they were. They weren't this type. And none of the 12 that I mentioned for this specific type of zoning request was withdrawn. These all found their way through. But I know what you're saying. I've been in ZBA meetings where after a discussion is had by the applicant, the ZBA, and maybe neighbors, the applicant says, you know what, I think maybe we can work this out. For now, let's withdraw, and it gets worked out. But none of the ones of the 12 I cited specific to this amendment request were withdrawn. These all went through, 11 approved, 1 denied. I just want to make sure the data is right.
All right, so why don't you let us hear from the public.
Sure.
And we'll have you and Eric available to answer questions.
Lauber.
We really do have to stop meeting like this. Daniel Lauber, 7215 Oak. I'm addressing you really as a planner, as a professional planner and zoning attorney, more so than as a resident. As John alluded, this is intended to protect innocent neighbors, this requirement for the variation. Now, in zoning in general, we try to make zoning fair. It's kind of important. We don't want to harm adjacent property owners. And here we have a situation where the zoning code protects an innocent property owner from someone, their next-door neighbor, putting up and extending their non-conforming use beyond what the next-door neighbor could have imagined when they bought their house. And I don't think it's remotely fair to allow someone to possibly intrude upon their neighbor like that. It was noted in when we heard this a number of years ago when I was on the ZBA, in the findings of fact, it noted one expert witness, the guy with the crutch, presented an analysis of existing and proposed regulations related to legal nonconforming residential additions, which was uncontradicted factual evidence demonstrating that this amendment would allow homes to be expanded as of right, even when the expansion would block light and air from the adjacent homes, block views, or cause flooding on the adjacent property. I do remember one hearing we had that, I don't remember how it all wound up, except there was evidence of flooding would be caused, and I seem to recall that the ZBA came up with a scheme that would alleviate the flooding that would be caused by the expansion of the nonconforming use, which would not have happened if they could have done this as of right, and they could have caused all this flooding on the next door neighbor's property, which I believe was a fairly elderly individual. We also determined that no factual evidence was introduced to demonstrate that the current zoning provisions restricting the expansion of nonconforming side yard setbacks had deterred any property maintenance plans, and indeed, there has been no evidence of that sort presented here. We also found that there was no evidence that the existing provisions had caused construction inconsistent with a home or neighborhood in order to conform to the zoning code, and indeed, no evidence has been presented here. And there was no factual evidence introduced that the zoning had caused any undue burden on property owners required to request a variation to continue a nonconforming side yard setback. The bottom line is, just as there was no evidence presented 7 years ago that would justify this change, no evidence has been presented here by any expert witness that would justify this change. It's really important. I actually think it'd be wise to engage in what I call fact-based zoning. I think that to really determine whether or not this is an issue that needs to be changed, the village should be surveying the next-door neighbors of the buildings, properties that have received these variations to find out if they have had adverse impacts due to the variations, if they've had light blocked, air blocked, flooding, other problems. It would have to be a survey done very carefully, and the people would have to be guaranteed individual anonymity in order to avoid issues developing with their next door neighbor. But that would give you the facts. And indeed, if nobody's had any problem, well, then maybe you should approve this. But my guess is you've probably had people have a problem. But the bottom line comes back to, there's been 12 in a decade. That's not exactly burdensome. It's not a lot. It's very few, less than 1.5 a year. Even though you've approved 92% of them, all but one, denying that one was appropriate, very appropriate. And I guess it may have led up to this zoning amendment, because I'm just curious as to why this came up all of a sudden. And the history that I know of from Village Board is that someone was, ZBA, after holding a proper hearing and making proper findings of facts, determining that the applicant did not meet, I think, any of the standards for the variation, the Village Board voted 3-3 on a motion to overrule your decision. And then a few days later, one of the trustees decided, He didn't like the way he voted. He wanted to change it. He seemed to think that because you had approved another variation for a similar situation, except it was this should be approved. He seemed to think that these carry precedent. And as Frank has pointed out time and again, these decisions do not establish any precedent. The case that the trustee was thinking of was one where the applicant had absolutely no alternative. And in the case of the applicant who was denied, not only did that applicant have alternatives, but it did not meet the standards. It could not prove hardship. So suddenly this appears on your agenda. I have a feeling it is a continuation of that. I don't know if this is Chicago-style politics or not. I'm sure that would never happen in River Forest. But that got your attention. But I urge you to recommend denial of this zoning amendment because there's just no evidence, no factual evidence, no expert witness testimony that shows this causes a problem, and we need to protect the next-door neighbors of these homes. I mean, just think about it. If you buy a home and then your next-door neighbor is going to expand it back and up and they're just 3 feet away from you, that could have quite an impact on you, reducing your property values and harming you. And what's wrong with the case-by-case examination? I think Commissioner Burney was quite right that this warrants a case-by-case review in order to protect the neighbors. Thank you.
Tim Beckman.
Hi there. I'm Ty Beckman, Tim Beckman. Excuse me. I live at 550 Thatcher, and I just wanted to say I support 1023, number 3, the addition of the Child Daycare Center as a special use PRI zone. That's it.
Susan Veazey.
Great job pronouncing my name. Hello, my name is Susan Veazey. I live at 517 Keystone Avenue. I am a parent of children at Mosaic Montessori Academy, and I also support the addition of the child care centers as a special use in the PRI zoning. Thank you.
Oh my goodness. Maria Ramos.
Hi, my name is Maria Kernan Ramos. I'm the director of Mosaic Montessori. I support it's a preschool, it's really not a daycare, and we are here just to ask permission to accept 15 to 23 age children, and so that's why we're here.
Sean Kruger.
Good evening, Sean Kruger of 346 Parker Avenue in the aforementioned denial of variation. I wanted to state just a couple of things I thought that might be important. First off, I completely agree with Mr. Lauber in the protection of the neighbors and the impact that any addition may have on your neighbors. I think the overall thing to consider would be that when this variation was considered, that in 08, I think it was, it considered a lot of new construction, but I don't know that it necessarily considered pre-existing homes with non-conforming walls, as the ordinance currently states. Also, I think that it might be worth considering this overwhelming idea that not only is what the zoning board being asked to consider a increase in height and also an increase in length. I think the current zoning ordinance in the increase of length is appropriate, but I would like to state that the increase in length also considers homes that are of two stories currently. So therefore, that would allow a two-story home addition to, you know, go back 20 feet, but I don't know that necessarily considers single-story homes, and there are a lot of those. There's not a large percentage, and I don't know the numbers offhand. But, you know, what I initially asked was not so much that we extend the first floor wall, because I would be more than willing to consider, and had considered in the original drawings that I had submitted, to the addition on the back of the house to conform with current side yard setbacks of 5 feet. It was just the unconventional idea of extending a story up one. So maybe it's worth considering not allowing both at the same time, maybe one or the other, but not both, because I could honestly see, if I were a next door neighbor to the north, how that would tremendously impact my lifestyle. So maybe one or the other, but not both. I mean, is that worth maybe mentioning? Also, excuse me for a second. But I think it's worth mentioning also that typically when people move into any neighborhood, whether it be the beautiful community of River Forest or any of the aforementioned communities that Mr. Houseel had mentioned, I don't know that we expect a lot of impact from zoning when we have dreams or ideas of what we see as being, you know, a home that may have been built in the 50s or 40s and doesn't really consider the current family sizes. But maybe allowing, you know, those that are interested in pursuing their dreams just to kind of do what they think may be necessary to build a home that's suitable for their family of the size currently. So I don't want to be the dead horse here, but thank you for your time.
Anybody else? All right, so anybody else in the audience that wants to address the board tonight on these three amendments? All right, Mr. Palm, anything else, anything you'd like to say?
Thank you. Notwithstanding Mr. Lauber's comments about Chicago-style politics in River Forest, I appreciate everyone's feedback here this evening. You know, I think one of the challenges that arises is when the zoning code was shifted from, you know, 3 feet to 5 feet, when you are scraping the property and building a brand new home, 5 feet seems realistic and you can start from scratch. For many years, the zoning code was at 3 feet. And so we are faced with challenges where people are trying to reinvest in their property, make additions, put a significant amount of money into their to home to make it better, and really are trying to do it with a regulation, at least in my opinion, that is really set for if you were building on a new lot of record or a home where or a lot where a home was taken down. So I think that's one thing to certainly consider. And I think the flip argument, where Mr. Houseel and I, who do a ton of work together, do disagree, I think, a little bit on this particular item, is that are you getting a significant amount of these variations over the last decade? No, 12 is not a lot. 12 is a lot as it relates to how many variations we get in River Forest. So, you know, we can count variation applications on probably on one hand, typically in a year. In many other communities, sometimes you're having a zoning the zoning board's meeting every month, twice a month, dealing with one, two applications. So I think it's important to remain, keep some sort of perspective and context. And the counter argument, at least in my opinion, would be if John's point was there's not that many, let's all take a look, let's review each one, and we're approving all of them anyhow. That being said, if we're approving all of them or a majority of them, then we should go back and look at the code and change the code, because we typically then approve all of them anyhow. So it's kind of a flip on the same argument. So and I think that's it.
Mr. Palm, would you agree that each variation that is recommended to the trustees and then approved has been a public hearing, and we've made a determination that each of the standards have been met?
Yes.
Do you think our zoning variation process is overly time consuming?
I don't think it's overly time consuming, but it is time consuming, and there is certainly an expense to it.
You think $650 is a big expense?
I guess that's all in the eye of the beholder.
How much do you think a typical second story addition on a house costs?
More than $650.
$50,000?
Guess it all depends. I'm sure $50,000, $100,000.
So we're talking probably less than 1% additional cost for this process.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
How many examples in the village are there of on a north-south street where adjacent houses both have non-conforming side lots?
I wouldn't want to speculate on that number. I know the question you're asking, but I don't have that data in front of me.
Okay. That's all I got.
What's that?
That's all I had.
Okay.
Anything else for Mr. Palm? Thanks for coming. Anybody got it? John, anything you want to say?
Just one thing. I think, again, it's there's some distinction between sort of new construction and older construction or existing homes. And unfortunately, there's only a couple of ways to sort of split that. And one is, you look at the existing housing stock and say there are some homes that are 3 feet. So all new construction can be at 3 feet. And if you take a look at some of when this changed, this is when sort of the notion of McMansions was beginning to take place, where homes were getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. The change from 3 feet to 5 feet, the other important thing to remember is it wasn't just a change in 3 feet to 5 feet. It used to be 3 feet as measured to the closest point of the house to the side lot line. That included the eaves. And there's a lot of architectural styles in the village that have different varying eaves. So you had to sort of figure out what your eave was and work backwards to where your exterior wall was. So if an average eave is 1 to 1.5 feet, and we went from 3 feet to 5 feet, then we're talking about changing the code 6 inches from 5 feet to 3, because it wasn't really 3 was to the closest point, meaning the eaves. Now we have a 5 foot setback, but you can encroach of what, 1.5 feet into the eave? Is that what it is now? Or 1 or 1.5 feet into the set, like the eaves. For primary structure.
3 feet to the property line.
Right, so if it's a 5 foot setback, your eave can extend 2 feet into it. Whereas before, that 3 foot dimension was to the eave itself. So the eave placement didn't move. It's 3 feet. 3 feet before, because that's what the measuring. When it got put to 5 feet, it was 5 feet to the exterior wall, but you can exclude the eave up to 3 feet. So it changed the way it was defined, because it was easier for people to plan and measure when they were designing their homes, because they knew where the exterior wall was. Then the variable was the eave. So it wasn't defined the same way in terms of setbacks, so it's a little bit different. And that's it. And so, again, you can either look at your existing housing stock and say there are some homes in the village that are 3 feet. So, therefore, anything should all be 3 feet. Or you can say, let's make it 5 feet, and then the ones that are 3 feet have to seek relief. And the reason I say that is it's impossible to write a zoning ordinance. This board wouldn't exist if you could do this. It's impossible to write a zoning ordinance where all the standards work for 100% of the properties. It just is impossible. You write a zoning ordinance to work for 90 to 95% of the properties, because that's common sense. And then for those 5 or 10% of the people where it doesn't work, variations exist to grant relief where needed. Or appropriate. And that's just sort of the way it is. So it's, again, there's no one way, right way, or wrong way to do this. That's why every community does it differently. You just have to figure out what works best for River Forest. And there's going to be difference of opinion, and there's no right or wrong. It's just what works. So,
John, I have a question. So in Riverside, they allow you to go vertically.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you think is the more acceptable type of thing? And certainly not both.
I won't. To me, the more acceptable, and again, it's purely preference or opinion.
But I think it's, if it was one or the other, to me, it's what we allow, because you can take a lot of additions. Again, a lot of one-story homes like bungalows. I used to live in a small one-and-a-half-story bungalow. Those are common to put additions on, but what you typically see, and again, there's no one way, but you typically see a home that's two or two-and-a-half stories, and they do the great room, big kitchen, master bath, you know, whatever, on the back. So they take the existing structure and they push it back 20 or 30 or whatever feet further back. So that is a more common type of addition than it is to have not go back but to go up. Most additions, again, there's always exceptions, but there seems to be a greater number that go back with the existing frame structure than to go up and not back. So I think the reason, again, I was here for 2012. I was here for the one before that, working with all the local architects and builders. And even the local architects and builders says, if you want to accommodate the greatest number of additions, easily let people go back a certain distance. And that's why it was 12. And that's why then 6 years later, we increased it to 20 feet, because that's the most common addition request, is pushing back.
So. And affect the neighbor less than
vertical. Well, yes, I suppose, because if they're used to the height of the structure, they're used to at least some of the light and air that they get on at least part of their house, that's already there. Now, that light and air impact is going to be further as it goes back, but that's a bigger difference than seeing a 10-foot wall with a pitched roof, and all of a sudden you have a 26-foot wall with a pitched roof. So it still could very much impact the neighbor, but often what you're beginning to push back into is people's backyards and stuff, as opposed to up. So again, potential for impact is there regardless when you do an addition. But we want to be a village that accommodates reinvestment. We want to accommodate and encourage additions and investment and, you know, home rehabilitation. We want to keep our housing stock viable.
Do you think the variation process discourages reinvestment?
I don't think so. Mr. Palmer, Eric is right. He said, you know, it is time, it is money. It's not a ton of time concerned to some communities, and it's not a ton of money, but it is time and money. And I don't know if anybody on the ZBA has gone through a variation. I have. I had to in my first home. So I know the application, and again, I can navigate it maybe a little bit better than other people because it's what I do, but I know the application process, I know the fees, I know the procedures. I've administered it in several other communities. In terms of a process, it's not onerous relative to a lot of other processes, but it is more onerous than not having to do it. I mean, not having to get a variation is easier than having to get even an easy one. So there is time, there is money, but it's not overly onerous compared to most communities that require one. So,
all right, any other questions? All right, so at this point, we're going to close the public portion of the hearing. That means that no one else from the audience can address us unless we ask you a question, and we'll consider these proposed amendments to the zoning code, and we'll do them one at a time. So let's consider the proposed amendment to 10.19.3K, which is the proposed addition of this language. So I agree with the concept. Okay, my concern is, what's a person with a disability? I mean, if somebody's been adjudicated disabled by a court, okay, then there's the eye test. You know, if I see somebody in a wheelchair or crutches, they're disabled. But I'm not politically correct, and if I think somebody is an idiot, then to me they may be disabled. Is that qualified too? But it's not defined, I guess.
I think that's kind of the point, that Concordia, or whoever's going to read it, is going to determine that they've, met that standard to their best.
I think it's better left a little ambiguous in terms of that. Because, like you say, if you start trying to divine your disabilities, they tend to change also. At least they certainly have in society as time has gone on. So,
So what if you get an applicant that says, I've considered what we might think are traditional disabilities, and somebody says, well, you didn't consider somebody who needs a comfort animal. You know, should the applicant be punished because, or should the application be delayed or denied because of, you know, the vagueness of the term disability? That's all I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. So we can deal with that problem if it ever comes before us.
Yeah.
Right. I don't think the term is meant to suggest things at the extremes. I think it's just
but that
meant
won't, that
they
won't
consider.
Prevent somebody from raising it.
That's true. People can raise all kinds of things.
Right. Okay.
What does the act define it as?
Huh?
The American Disabilities Act.
Right. So there's various definitions in state law and in federal law that we can refer to if we ever need to kind of drill down on this issue. I don't recommend that you try to define it in your zoning code.
Okay. All right. So you want to make a motion?
I would make a motion to accept this.
Okay. Is there a second? Any additional discussion? So what's the standard that we're supposed to consider when we vote on amendments to the zoning code?
So your code doesn't list any specific standards, and text amendments are not subject to a set of standards under state law. They're a matter of legislative discretion, but you do look at things, you know, is it depending on the context, is it consistent with the goals of the zoning code, your comprehensive plan, you know, is it further, the extent to which it creates nonconformities, or in this case, you know, may eliminate some, the extent to which the proposed amendment is consistent with the overall structure and organization of the zoning ordinance, will it benefit the residents of the community as a whole, those types of things.
Okay. So those are things to consider when you vote on these text amendments. All right, so it's been moved and seconded that we recommend to the Zoning Board of Trustees that Section 10.19.3K be amended as proposed. You want to
second it?
All right, you want to call the roll?
Chairman Martin.
Yes.
Mr. Burney.
Yes.
Mr. Dombrowski.
Yes.
Mr. Lucchese.
Yes.
Ms. O'Brien.
Yes.
Ms. Shoup-Cable.
Yes.
All right, so now let's consider the proposed amendment to the land use chart, Section 10.21.3, Appendix A, to include as a special use in the PRI district a child daycare center. Is that the child daycare center? That's already defined in our code, is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Any discussion about this proposed amendment? Somebody want to make a motion?
I'll make a motion.
All right. Is there a second to Mr. Lucchese's motion? You made a motion to approve it, correct?
Yes.
All right. It's been moved and seconded that we recommend to the Village Board of Trustees this proposed amendment to the land use chart. Any discussion? If you want to call the roll.
Ms. Shoup-Cable.
Yes.
Ms. O'Brien.
Yes.
Mr. Lucchese.
Yes.
Mr. Dombrowski.
Yes.
Mr. Burney.
Yes.
Chairman Martin.
Yes. All right, so now let's consider these proposed amendments to 10.87C2. The first amendment that I think we should consider is under A on page 1, the eaves. And as I understand this, this would permit the, in the event of an addition, the eaves can, they don't need our permission to have the eaves match the existing eaves. Is that correct? If they're going back horizontally, the eave can they don't need our permission to have the eave follow the line that's already in place. Right. All right. Any discussion? All right. Somebody want to make a motion to approve this A, which deals with the eaves?
I'd like to make a recommendation that we accept the addition to the eaves requirements that they be allowed as described here.
Okay. Is there a second to Mr. Burney's motion?
Second.
All right. It's been moved and seconded that we recommend to the Village Board of Trustees the amendment considering the eaves as set out in this memorandum. Is there any discussion? Want to call the roll?
Mr. Burney?
Yes.
Mr. Lucchese?
Yes.
Ms. Schumkegel?
Yes.
Chairman Martin?
Yes.
Mr. Dombrowski?
Yes.
Ms. O'Brien?
Okay. Now, let's look at the proposed amendment that deals with the ability to build a non-conforming wall, build vertically on a non-conforming on a wall on a build vertically on a wall that's a non-conforming setback. Any discussion on this one? All right, so somebody want to make a motion?
I make a motion to deny or not accept.
All right, is there a second?
Second.
All right, so it's been moved and seconded that we recommend to the Village Board of Trustees that this proposed amendment not be adopted. Is that accurate? All right, any discussion on this? All right, you want to call the roll?
Chairman Martin?
Yes.
Mr. Burney?
Yes.
Mr. Dombrowski?
Yes.
Mr. Lucchese?
Yes.
Ms. O'Brien?
Yes.
Ms. Schumkegel?
Yes.
All right, so the recommendation from the Zoning Board of Appeals to the Village Board is that this proposed amendment to the zoning code will not be adopted. There's nothing else on the agenda for this evening. Do we have anything that appears to be pending, Cliff?
Yes.
So?
Probably another zoning variation next month.
Okay. Have a motion to dismiss?
Motion to dismiss.
Is there a second? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you.